It still didn't have everybody on the screen at once.
But okay, you see that there's a little slider. If you move your cursor between the two images, there's a little slider, and you can move that across to make one side of it bigger, and then you get more people.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. Wow, it is a room full. Are you hearing okay now, Laura?
Yeah. I was trying to get the light better, because I look like a pale ghost. Everybody looks really good. I mean, your colors are so great. Grandfather is natural. You and Tom are natural looking. Let me see. I'll try to move over. Marsha always looks good. Dorothy and Danny. Danny's lighter than normal. No Cindy tonight, huh?
No Cindy. Okay, let me. Okay, can you guys help me out with the what session it is in Chinook? I forgot to do that.
Not sure. 40 something.
Say it again.
Locket Totlam PMOXT.
42.
Okay. All right. Excellent. All right. And what is that? Locket PMOXT. MOXT. I should know that.
Locket Totlam PMOXT.
So okay. That's
40
fingers again,
two.
Dorothy.
Oh, 42, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The last time was 41, so.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead. Everyone is here. Welcome. Welcome, everybody, to lesson 42, Klahauya, on this fifth day of November. A Akoksam Locket Totlam PMOXT. We are joined again for a time of sharing, learning, and preserving heritage for many generations to come. Our mission, as always, with this story hour is to preserve stories of the Native American world, stories shared by Grandfather Roy Wilson. An important part. Important segment of this preservation effort is our lesson in Chinook Wawa, hosted by Rainbow and Marsha. Tonight, Grandfather has some wonderful artifacts and a wonderful story for us. And with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to the master storyteller. Welcome, Grandfather. It's very good to be with you again.
Masi, masi, masi.
Go ahead and take it away.
Klahaya, my dear friends. Before I tell tonight's story, the lesson itself, I'll tell you a little bit of a kind of a preface to it. In the long ago time, long before white men came to this area, at the Paskin Indians, now they live up in the northern British Columbia and Alaska country. A large group of them migrated down into this area in which we live here. They lived in the Willapa Hills, which are over here on the coast, coastal range, just west of us where we are living here. But then, long before white men came, they began to run into problems with food gathering. And the game, the deer, the elk, the herbs, the roots. And so only a few remained. They intermarried with Kalits and became the Kalits Hulaqua-Qualioka band. But here they were known, the Athabascans were known as Hulaqua. And when they left here, they migrated down into Oregon and on that same coastal range. And they were known as the Umpqua. They were Hulaqua here. Many of you probably have been gone now down I-5 and remember crossing the Umpqua River. And this is an Umpqua legend that I'm going to tell. So I'm giving you a little preface. I might say a little bit more that they later migrated down into the Southwest where they are today. And you'd never know that they once lived here. You always probably thought of them as being true Southwest Indians for centuries, millennia. But you can trace their migration by their language, because the language they speak today is still the Athabascan language that they migrated from hundreds of years ago up in Alaska and northern British Columbia. Today you know them as the Apache. Anyway, this legend comes from when they were living along the Umpqua between the coast range and the sea, the Pacific. And the story goes like this. Once, the long ago time, the Umpqua people were hit with a terrible disease. But before I tell you that part, it was back in the 1800s, in the early 1800s, when the first white settlers started to arrive. And this one settler and his family, they built themselves a mountain cabin. And one day they killed a white deer, a white deer, and an Umpqua, ancient old Umpqua medicine man, was quite disturbed by that. And he went and he said to the white man, you're going to bring great disaster and trouble to us. Why is that? And so he then told this story, this legend that I started to tell him a few minutes ago about the white deer. And so back to what I started to say, he said, in the long ago time, many Umpqua became very ill. It was probably some great, terrible epidemic. Hundreds of them were dying, and many of them died. And more of them were now very sick, and they were in the process of dying. And the old ancient medicine man, he told them, we must move away from here. We must move up to the top of the high mountain where we can be closer to the great chief of the above, and maybe he'll hear our cries and our prayers. And so they all packed up and they moved way up into the high part of the high mountain there on the coast range and set up their lodges. And many of them were still dying. And then the chief's daughter, she was a young woman, and she was very beautiful. She was very tall, and she was always so good to the people of the tribe. They all loved her dearly, and now she had become sick, and she was dying. And the people, the remnants of the tribe that were still alive, they gathered around her deathbed where she was dying. They were crying and praying and mourning when finally she stopped breathing. Her body became very limp. And the people were so crushed losing her. And right at that time, a white deer entered into the lodge. very rare to see a white deer. This white deer walked all around amongst the people, and then finally walked up to the young maiden, the chief's daughter, and kissed her on her lips, and then left the lodge. As the white deer left the lodge, her hands began to move, and she sat up. Then she stood, and she said, "I'm well, I'm well, I'm no longer sick." From then on, they said, the great chief of the above sent one of his spirit messengers, the white deer, and it's a healer. And now, young settler, you killed the healer. And now we're in for big trouble. End of legend of the white deer. What we might learn from that, that legend might have two different impacts. It's possible that it is a historic legend, telling a legend of an event that actually happened to the people long ago, the Umpquas. It also is very possible that it's a moral teaching legend, that is, be careful how you treat your healers. You don't want to kill the healer, which reminds me of a Christian legend. There was a healer known as the Bible as the great physician, Jesus. And they killed him, put him on a cross and killed that healer. But fortunately, he rose again. So he's still here healing us. Be careful how you treat anyone, but especially your healers. And so just a little bit of what I see as potential lessons learned from that legend. So before I show you the artifact, any questions or comments on the white deer legend? Oh, I might make something else. I never dreamt that I'd ever be kissed by a deer. I think I may or may not have told you this story, but it was on one of my vision quests. I've been on 8 vision quests in my lifetime. And it was on one of those, 4 days and 4 nights on the mountain all alone, no food, fasting, and in prayer. And on the morning of the 4th and final day, I had been sitting there, starting to meet the 4 directions, starting in the east, and then the south, and then the west, and then the north, singing my chants and praying my prayers. And now I was facing the north, and I was in silence, just in meditation, now waiting for the Creator to talk to me. In the white world, you probably call that meditation time. But anyway, as I sat there in silence, I suddenly became aware of movement to my right, and I looked into the east, and 2 does came. One stopped at my eastern stake of my circle, and an eagle feather hanging on it, and the other went to my south stake. And then about that time, I heard a twig snap in the left. I looked, and 2 does were coming from the left, from the west. And one stopped at my eagle feather and flag on the stake in the west, and the other went to the one in the north. Deer don't just stand still. They have a tendency to just be slowly moving here and there as they're grazing. The fact they stood at those 4 eagle feather stakes and flags for about 1.25 hours was amazing. But when the one left from the east, she stepped into my circle and literally kissed me on my right cheek. And then she left. Then the one from the south came and kissed me and left. Then the one from the west came and kissed me on the left cheek. And then the one from the north and then left. As the one from the north left, her hind hoof kicked up a little bit of the dirt. And then there was a little tiny, small, bright red stone. That stone I still carry in my medicine bag today. But I never dreamt that I would ever be actually kissed by a deer. And so when I heard this legend about the white deer and how she brought healing, thank you, Creator, for giving us such special sacred events and ceremonies in our lifetime. Questions and or comments on the Umpqua white deer?
That is beautiful, Grandfather. I think Marcia has a question for her, for you. I'm going to unmute Marcia in just a minute, but I have a question for Laura first. Laura, I muted your mic, and I know you're on the phone. Can you try and unmute and see if we're going to be able to do that? Okay, got it. Thank you, Laura.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I did that because when your papers make a noise, Grandfather just appears and your phone icon that comes up. So good. Yeah, I'm glad we figured out how to do that. Okay. Marcia, what would you like to say?
So what is the special deer medicine power?
Deer medicine power. There are several things that we receive from our deer medicine power. When I was kissed by the deer, I would say, and visited by the deer, they brought deer medicine power to me. Deer can leap over high fences and get into your garden. And the deer medicine power, when they give that medicine power to you, that gives you the power to leap over many high obstacles that are thrown in your pathway. In my work, Marcia is well acquainted with one event I had happen in my life just a couple years ago, where she was in the court, she and her sister Linda supporting me. But we leaped over the high fence and we ended up being judged not guilty. But that's deer medicine power. it can happen, deer medicine power can give you the ability to leap over high obstacles physically, spiritually, sociologically, economically, in all kinds of ways. Deer also are very, very graceful, and they bring to you the Madison power, giving you the potential power to be very graceful. And so all you do, you study the deer. The deer is a beautiful animal, and it gives you the medicine potential power. Notice I use that word potential, to become very gentle, very loving, very graceful. When I use the word potential, I would say that when we look at all of the animals, and in fact, my next book that will be coming off the press is just about ready to go to be published, titled I Am. And it lists all these animals and their power that they give to us. And then I say, I am deer, I am eagle, I am raccoon, I am skunk, I am. And then I say, and I have the potential power to be the gentle, to leap over the obstacles. And some people, when I say in my introduction of this book, you may be reading my book, which is actually what it is. It gives you a large specific list, series of meditations, take them one at a time. And then you have this power, and you may be reading it and say, that's not me. I'm not that at all. And I would just chuckle and laugh and say, well, it's within you, because all of the powers are within all of us. For the Spirit of God dwells within all of us, and all those powers belong to the Spirit of God. But you're not aware of the powers that are within you. So they're potential powers. They're asleep within you. You need to wake them up. You need to start using them and let them grow and develop within you. But when I'm talking about the deer and the medicine powers from Marcia's question, I'll probably take a little extra time here, but I not only want to talk about the medicine powers of deer, of all the animals, and that they are, those powers are within us, and some of those you would be much aware of them, because you say, yeah, that's me. You know you have that power, but those that you say, that's not me, I'm just going to say you better wake them up. They're asleep within. Okay. I hope I answered your question, Marcia.
Yes, very good.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Very good question. Very good question.
I don't see any other hands.
I have one question, Grandfather. Okay. Do you know about when the, was it the Athabascans migrated?
No, I will say this, that it was so long ago, long, probably centuries before the white man arrived here. And the reason I say that is the Apache had been in the Southwest long before white man came. And how long was it that they were Umpqua before they went down there? And then how long was it they were here before they went to Umpqua? It could be 1,000 years or 2,000 years that all that had happened. What I will say is this, that when I was a young lad and I would go to Kalis tribal meetings, we had four bands. We had the Lower Kalis River Band from the mouth of the Kalis up to about the Mossy Rock area where we had 29 villages, and then the Upper Kalis on the Upper Kalis River, 14 villages. We had the Lewis River Kalis over on the Lewis River, and we had what we called the Quahioka Kalis in the Willapa Hills. And now the Lower Kalis spoke a C-series dialect of the Salish. The Upper Kalis spoke a K-series dialect of the Salish, the same as the Lewis River Kalis. But the Quahioka, the Hulaqua, they had a mixed type of jargon. It was a mixture of the Lower Kalis language, the Salish dialect, along with a lot of that Athapascan was mixed in it. And so when I go to a Kalis tribal meeting when I was young, before the meeting started, there'd be this group in a little circle, and they were all talking to each other, but they were Upper Kalis. Maybe they were talking to Tainapum Sahopton, dialect of the Sahopton. And over here would be Lower Kalis, this group. They didn't know Tainapum Sahopton, but they all knew the Lower Kalis. And they'd be talking in their dialect. But when I was young, there were very, very few of the Hulaqua still alive, but there were a few that were mixed Hulaqua Kalis. And there would be that kind of a jargon of those two languages. And so I heard a little of it, not much, just a little of it. There are none of the Hulaquas left alive anymore. We don't know of any of the descendants, but Hazel Pete, whom as many of us knew, she had Hulaqua blood along with Kalis and Chehalis blood. But when we went into the tribal meeting, since we all spoke different dialects and languages, how did we converse with each other? The meetings were all in the jargon that you're learning with Marcia and Laura Rainbow. Okay, any other questions or comments? I thought that legend ought to be a good one for us. Okay, artifacts. I have four necklaces that I'm going to show you this evening. They are each one of them somewhere in the neighborhood of approximately 200 years old. They are ancient trade bead necklaces. Two of them are made from ancient Russian trade beads. When the first traders started arriving, the French, the English, the Russians, they brought these trade beads, and the Hudson Bay Company many times got these and then sold them to our Indian people or traded them to the Indian people for goods. And so two of them I'm going to show you will be Russian trade bead necklaces. And the other two, which date to about the same period of time, are Venetian trade beads. And so here they come. Can you see it?
Yes.
This is a Russian trade bead necklace, somewhere close to 200 years of age. Mm. And here's another one, quite different, but it's also made from Russian trade beads. Can you see it okay?
Yes, we can.
And the Venetian trade beads are like lace. They're very delicate and dainty. Wow. That one. And aren't they beautiful?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. Very beautiful.
So those are all ancient trade beads. Before the white man came here, the Russian, the French, and the English, we made all of our beads out of either bone, seashells, wood, stone. So this was something new for us when we got the trade beads that came from Europe and Asia. Questions and or comments on the artifacts?
Marcia has a question. Go ahead, Marcia.
So what were the predominant colors in each type of necklace or bead? Were there predominant colors that characterized each of those?
Dominant colors. My own experience of the trade bead necklaces that I have seen. Green, bluish green was predominant in many of the old necklaces that I don't have any of, but I've seen them. Black is also another dominant color. There were many different colors used, but all the old trade bead necklaces that I have seen, most of the dominant colors were black and greenish blue.
And what were the black beads made out of?
I'm not really sure. I think it was either a black form of jasper. Jasper comes in numerous different colors. It could be somewhere obsidian, but I don't think so. I'm not positive on that, but they made many things out of obsidian. But normally we would, as Indians, we would make our arrowheads and spears out of obsidian. Obsidian has been in ancient cultures, Egypt and other parts of Europe and Asia, made all kinds of made statues and mirrors and many different things out of obsidian. But obsidian fractures very, very easily. And it's very, very difficult mineral to carve. And it could be carved into beads, but I don't think so, because that'll be small and very difficult. Obsidian, when it breaks off, it fractures easily and into very, very sharp edges. And so they were greatly used for knives, scrapers, cleaning hides, and so forth. Marcia could probably do a better job of telling you this part of the story about obsidian than I can tell you, because of her own part in playing a great role in the archaeological digs at our ancient village site of Coapic, where the Kalas Falls Dam is built today. And there were many artifacts. They dug two holes, and Marcia can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but as I recall, the two holes that the archaeologists dug were about 2 feet wide by about 6 feet long and about 8 feet deep to bedrock. And it was something like, as I recall, like about 3,000 artifacts that were found in those two holes. Now, when I say 3,000 artifacts, if a salmon was found down there, each bone was an artifact. But when they found the obsidian scrapers, they put a looked at them under a microscope, where they had been used as like knives. And they also took today's modern steel or metal scalpels that medical doctors use today and put them under the same microscope. And on those fine cut edges on our modern scalpel are all kinds of little nicks. I remember seeing those on film. The obsidian scraper that our Indians use, perfectly smooth all the way. Yeah, I'm going to turn this right now to Marcia because she may correct me on a little bit of that, but that is what I recall. Marcia, any comments on that dig?
No, there's no correcting to do. That was how those blades were. They were just exceedingly sharp. There was an artifact. One of the artifact pieces was a human femur. So there were human remains there, which helped strengthen the Cowlitz tribe's claim to that as a significant site. So that has nothing to do with beads or blades, but that was found as part of it too.
What is that on that land today? Is there anything commemorating?
Concrete.
It's Cowlitz. That dig was done because the Cowlitz Falls Dam was put there. That was at Cowlitz Falls.
Oh, okay.
And so the Cowlitz Falls Dam was put there. And so the reservoir behind Cowlitz Falls is called Lake Skaniwa, over one of our early chiefs. Uh-huh. And Roy and I were instrumental in selecting that name before the State Geographic Names Board had to approve the name. And there were other names submitted, particularly to commemorate settlers, but we went out with Skaniwa, our chief. And so Cowlitz Falls Dam was built and is owned by Tacoma City Light. And so the park, Taidnapam Park, which is below that was part of our settlement agreement, was that they would build that public park and I haven't been there for years, but have some reader boards there regarding the Cowlitz tribe.
Yeah, the ancient village site of Kuapik is now buried underneath tons of concrete of the dam. They built it over that site.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? I guess we're ready to let Marcia and Rainbow have it now.
We are. So off we go to Chinook Wawa. Our language lesson taught by Rainbow and by Marcia. You take it away.
Okay, well, so holding over from the last couple of weeks, Danny and I have our conversation prepared, and we'll send this out after the fact in case there's any corrections or anything like that that need to be part of it. But I did want us to tell you, you know, as you're listening, what are the new words that we identified in this conversation, and give you those and give you their definitions. And then the other words are ones that have been on our list and we, you know, in our various conversations or study have used before. So one of the new words is Molly. M-A-L-I-E-H, Molly. And that means to marry or be married. You know, it's about marriage. And I want to say about that word, there's another very similar word, which is Molly. So the spelling's a little different and the pronunciation's a little bit different. So that, you know, there's two words that sound very similar, but tonight we're using Molly. And then another new word is callipine. And callipine means rifle. And that comes from a corruption of the English word carbine, which is a kind of rifle. Lincoln's rifle.
Okay.
And then I kind of think we've had it before. Moose Moose. Do you guys know what Moose Moose means?
We have, but I cannot.
We've mentioned it, but we haven't. We've mentioned it, but we haven't used it.
Okay. So Dorothy was signaling like sleep, but that's moose-um. But moose, yeah, moose is an animal. It's, oh, it's a cow.
Cow.
Yes. And then another word is quantisum. Quantisum means always. And then the final one is a phrase, choco cockshut. So we already know choco means to come or become, and cockshut means broken or disabled. And so we're using choco cockshut to mean hurt. Okay, so those are the new, so far as we can figure out what the new words are in this lesson. So I'm gonna start. And so we'll go through it, kind of all the way through it without discussing it. We'll go slowly. And I would suggest that you jot down what you can. And then we'll have a little discussion about, you know, what you heard, what you think it's about. And then we'll go back through it, sentences by sentence or word by word, is whatever we need to do to get the full sense of it. So I'm starting. Klahauya Danny, Moxt Week Onkati, Nika Man Russ, P. Nika, Klatawa Kopa, Eastern Washington.
Klahauya Marsha, Kata Masika, Klatawa, Yawa.
Nasika Hihi, Nasika Molly Sun.
Kansi, yeah, Masika Molly.
Nasika Molly Locket Totlam P Ict Yia. You guys should all get that one. Locket Totlam P Ict Yia.
Allah Delay Close. Ka Masika Klatawa Kopa Eastern Washington.
Nasika Klatawa Kopa Electric City. Kiwa Russ Tikeg Mamuk Hunt Talipus Yawa.
Micah Man Yaka Nanich Ik Talipus.
Nawika Yaka Mamuk Memalus Iktalapus Kopa Kalapin.
Ana Nika Sik Tum Tum Kopa Talapus.
Nika Wekt Halo to Keg. Keishi Talapus Choco Cockshut Moose Moose P Tennis Moose Moose. My cat's getting in the way. Russ Quanisum Wawa Masi Kopa Malus Memalus Talipus Tamanawas.
Nika Kwan Econum
Copit. Okay.
Very nice.
What
very
did you nice, guys? What did you guys get as a gist of that story?
You know, it would be really helpful to me if you could go through it again.
Oh, we will for sure do that. Yes.
I mean now. Oh. so I could hear it again.
Okay. Well, let's just go through what, it. Shall we go through it?
What I got out of it was, okay. What I got out of it was that you went to Eastern Washington to Electric City, and that you have been married, but I didn't get how many years, but I know that you guys have been done a stellar job. You're an inspiration to many of us. And that you saw a coyote, a dead coyote that had been shot, and the coyote was shot because it would harm the mother cow and her calf. Mm-hmm. Is that basically it?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice job, Laura.
Well, I got a word here and there and then put it together.
Dorothy, did you get any more details in that you want to add?
The dead coyote or the hurt coyote made Danny sad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty much, I pretty much got the same thing.
Okay. All right.
So how many years are you married?
Lockett Totlam P. It.
41.
Yep. That's why I said you guys should all get it. We just did less than 41 and this is
okay. Okay.
Okay. So first sentence. Klahalya Danny. Moxed week on Cutty. What does that mean?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks uh-huh. ago.
And so now it's been like, you know, a month ago, but 2 weeks ago. Nika Man Russ P. Nika.
My husband, Russ, and I.
Uh-huh. Klatawa Kopi, Eastern Washington.
You went to Eastern Washington.
Uh-huh. Okay, Danny, you take your sentence.
Lahalya Marsha, Kata, Masaika, Klatawa, Yawa.
Why you go there?
Where are you?
Perfect. Yeah, why? Oh, why Kata okay. is why or what? Why did you go there? And my response, Nasaika hihi, Nasaika Molly's son. Nasaika hihi. Nasaika Molly's well, son.
Enjoy, celebrate.
Yeah.
Our marriage day.
Okay.
Have fun.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Good. Okay, Danny.
Hansi, yeah. Masaika, Molly.
How long are you married?
Mm-hmm. How many years? Nasaika, Molly, Lockett, Totlam, Piyikt, Ia.
Married 41 years.
Mm-hmm.
Allah, delay close. Ka, oh,
very good.
Ka, Masaika, Klatawa, Kopa, Eastern Washington.
Where do you go in Eastern Washington?
Travel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Penny, are we doing this slow enough? Are you getting it?
I am. I'm kind of following along in my own time. So this is working really nice.
Okay. And like I said, we'll send this out afterwards. But okay. Nasaika Klatawa Kopa Electric City.
You go to Electric
City. Get that penny?
Mm-hmm.
We went to Electric City. Kiwa Russ Tikeg Mamuk Hunt Talapas Yawa. So Kiwa.
Because.
Russ Tikeg is likes. So Mamuk Hunt. What does that mean?
Mamuk. You make a hunt too.
Yeah.
To go hunting.
Is hunt?
Yeah, well, we didn't find a jargon word for hunt.
Okay.
So you can, when you put mamook in front of something, it's like making it into an action.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. It turns a noun into a verb, and it usually has an ing on the end of it.
Okay. Mamuka Talipus Yawa.
Talipus.
To get to hunt a coyote there.
Right.
And I'll say Mica Man Yaka Nanich Ik Talipus. Mica Man Yaka is.
My name is.
No. Mica Man. Not Nem.
Oh, I thought you said Mica Nem.
Man.
Oh, sorry.
With an M?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mica Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yaka.
Say it again, please.
Mica Man Yaka Nanich Ik Talipus.
Did he see one coyote?
Yeah.
Or a coyote.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, Nawika Yaka Mamuk Memelus.
Definitely, it was dead.
Well, he killed Yaka it. Mamuk
Memelus. He made Memelus. He killed it.
Yeah, he shot it. He killed it. He made it dead.
Yes, Ik Talipus Kopa Kalapin.
With his rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Is that legal?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
There's no limit.
I mean, you have to have nowadays you have to have a license, and not very long ago you didn't even need a license, but now you do. Okay, Danny.
Ana Nika Sik Tum Tum Kopa Talipus.
You're sad for that coyote.
Mm-hmm. Right. Does that make sense, Penny? Mm-hmm. Sik Tum Tum.
Mm-hmm.
Feel sad. Okay. Mm-hmm. And my reply I'll go so on is Nika Wekt Halo Tike. Nika Wekt Halo Tike. Tikeg. What does that mean?
What's the second word?
Not wekt. Again.
Wekt. W-E-G-H-T.
It's again a return.
Or also.
I too.
Uh-huh.
Was that one of the new words, wekt?
No. Well, I think we've had it before.
I too don't like it.
Yeah, so halo to keg is not like. To keg is to like, and halo to keg is to not like. And right. then I give the explanation. Keshi Talipus Chako Kokshet. So Keshi.
But.
Yep. Talipus Chako Kokshet.
Coyote.
Mm-hmm.
Coyote hurts.
Yep. Moose, moose, P. tennis, moose, moose.
Cows and baby.
Cow and her baby.
Uh-huh. Res quantisum. So remember I say quantisum is a new word. It means always.
Always. Mm-hmm.
So res quantisum wawa masi.
Oh, Russ always says thank you.
Okay. So your husband always says thank you to the coyote spirit.
Kopa memelus talipus. Tamanawas.
Yes.
That's why I say, Nika Kwan.
You're happy about that.
She's glad. She's glad. Okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Very, very good. That really helped me a lot.
That was very nice. Cool. You guys, nice job. Nice job, Annie.
Is there any lingering question about anything?
What'd you do with the coyote?
He left it in the field because it becomes food for other animals, for other scavengers.
Right.
Part of the way that he was helped to spot this coyote because it was, well, it was 137 yards away from him, was that there was a raven flying over it. And Russ has been told that every coyote has a raven, I think, that follows it. And I don't know if that's so, okay? But that clued him, there's a raven up in the sky, something must be going on. And so then he saw the coyote. And I don't even know if ravens and crows eat meat. I don't even know that. But certainly there would be some other predatory birds that would eat that carcass, or even some little animals might come and eat on that carcass time. So
because they eat the bones to get calcium.
Yeah.
And it is true about ravens and wolves work together. The raven will tell the wolf where prey is, because the ravens know there are always leftovers when the wolf makes a kill. So over thousands of years, up in the north, I know that ravens and coyotes work together.
Okay. Well, there we go.
And I would like to say something about animals going back into nature when you leave them. I used to have my horse boarded on the Muckleshoot Indian Reservation. And one time there was a dead skunk beside the path. And I rode my horse almost every day. Within 2 weeks, there was not even a scrap of hair left. And at first, it looked like there was a skunk still there, but all these little beetles and stuff had started eating it from the inside, you know, where it was touching the ground, and had worked up through it until it was just a shell. And then they ate that too. And I watched that over a 2 week period go back into nature.
Beautiful.
And I bet there were, there could have been birds that would take the hair, the fur, and incorporate that into their nests, I'm thinking.
Yeah, because by then the smell had dissipated a little bit. My horse didn't seem to mind it. I'd have to get off her and, you know, pick it up and look at it and everything. But she didn't seem to mind it, I guess, because I wasn't freaked out about it. So, yeah, everything goes back into nature because, you know, you don't see bear carcasses. You don't see hardly bones of anything unless it's like deer or elk or something that, you know, where the predators have taken the muscle. But I do know that animals chew on the bones for calcium.
That reminds me of reading a Rosa Crucian's book, and they had a story about Jesus, and he was walking along a trail with another man, and they came upon a carcass that had maggots crawling all over, and the other man said, "Ooh," and Jesus said, "It's beautiful. They're like pearls. They're anyway."
Nice.
Oh. You can get a lot of stories from other books about Jesus. Even right. The Quran mentions him more than the Bible does.
Really?
Actually, of what Jesus actually said, there is more recorded in the Quran than there is in the Bible.
Well, I'm sure grandfather would like to be a part of this.
In Islam, Jesus is considered a major, major prophet, not the Son of God, but they definitely take to heart his words because he was a major prophet.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Any more discussion about anything that Danny and I did? Discussion.
Very good discussion. That was fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you.
From the beginning of the lesson on to the ending discussion, it just doesn't get better than that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank
you. And we had just enough time. So what are we going to do next week?
Another pair.
We don't have many pairs.
Yeah.
I would pair up with you, Dorothy. Would you want to do that? Okay.
I'd love to.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Well, we will get together on Monday or Tuesday. How about that?
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay. All right. Call me if I don't call you.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being a part of this storytelling hour, to the people in the room, to the people who will be visiting this room in the future, to Tom, our editor who gets this down and gets it onto the website. Thank you very, very much. And just put it out to the world that you guys are doing a wonderful thing here. This is our little oasis in the midst of chaos. And I'm very, very glad I have this place to come to once a week. Klahauya.
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 Yeah.